CBSI on the World. I'm with Evan Thomas. His new book is Road to Surrender, Three Men and the Countdown to the End of World War II. The two bombs have been used against Hiroshima and Nagasaki. The Japanese cabinet is frozen. It cannot move one way or the other. It's negotiating in some fashion. The Americans, however, are reacting to the after-action photos that they're seeing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And now the question is what comes next, because the Japanese have not yet surrendered. Evan, the thinking is that there's another bomb. I believe it will be ready the middle of the month. General Marshall is aware there's another bomb. There might be even more bombs. I think he's asked how many can I have by November 1st. The third bomb seems to be the one that the debate is, General Spots, for example. Do we use it on Tokyo? What was their thinking about dropping that bomb on the emperor?
General Spots, although he's in his heart against dropping any atom bombs, he comes up with the idea of bombing Tokyo. Now, that may sound pretty apocalyptic, but actually his thought is to drop the bomb on a burned out area of Tokyo. About 16 square miles were burned in March, at least another five square miles in May. Much of Tokyo is just a burned ruin. And so General Spots' thought is they will drop a bomb in the burned out area. They had this grisly expression called the scare radius. The radius of the bomb would be enough to, not to kill the emperor and his men, but where they'd see the flash and the boom, it would scare them, the scare radius, not the lethal radius, but the scare radius. Or Spots also has the thought of dropping the bomb in Tokyo Harbor to create a demonstration there. Now, in retrospect, that would have been unwise because it would have created a radioactive tidal wave. So that was not a good idea, but he did have that idea. And that's what they're thinking about, a third bomb. And it appears that they persuaded Truman, because on August 14th, just a few hours before Truman learns that the Japanese have surrendered for good this time, for real, he tells the British ambassador, regretfully, I've decided we have to drop a third atom bomb on Tokyo. So it's a good thing the Japanese surrendered, because they were heading towards dropping a third bomb on Tokyo, probably, as I say, in this burned out area. But they were going to have a third bomb ready by about August 20th. So the Japanese dodged a very big bullet by surrendering.
On August 13th, remember, the bombs have been dropped now. The Japanese are confirming that they're atomic bombs. They initially thought maybe they only have one, because it requires a great deal to create a bomb. The second one answered that question. They can presume there are more coming. And the Americans, Spots, commanding the Pacific B-29s, sends, I have the notes here, says 1,000 B-29s. General Marshall says, send everything you've got. He sends 900. They're still burning Japanese cities on the 13th and 14th. Is that correct, Evan?
Yes. The raid wasn't an all-out incendiary raid, although there were some incendiaries were used, but they want to make a big demo. The point is they want to make a big show to show the Japanese and the world what we've got. It's always local politics, service politics. The Army Air Force wants to be an independent air force, and they want to demonstrate to their Congress, to the U.S. Congress and to the world, that they can do this on a grand scale. And so that's why General Arnold and Marshall are pushing for a big raid to show off American air power. It's not purely an incendiary raid. I think there are some incendiaries involved, but most by now, we are shifting a little bit towards precision bombing, actually. Ironically, at the end, we started to have the capacity to do it. So it's a huge raid. I don't remember the death toll, but we killed several thousand more Japanese doing it. A plane or two actually pulls back. They hear about the Japanese surrender. I know of at least one B-29 that turned around and flew home pretending to have mechanical problems because they didn't want to drop any more bombs because the war was over.
Meantime, back in the palace, there is a genuine coup organized by serving Japanese military officers, army officers. And the question is, how much of the coup was known to the Big Six? Evan, the interpretation here is that Anami had to know there was planning something around him to either to make him dictator or to remove him and put a new person in. Did Anami know about the details of the plot?
Anami is meeting with the coup plotters, who are these young hotheads. They come to his house and they talk about the plan is basically to seize the palace and to make the emperor not their prisoner, but their hostage, but to preserve the emperor, but on their terms as a military government. And Anami encourages this at times. He discourages it at times. I think he's ambivalent about it.
Yes, it felt like the stomach game, Evan. It felt like he was saying things he didn't believe to see what they were up to.
He was. I think that's true. He's speaking out of both sides of his mouth to different groups. I think, and we don't know this, he takes his sword and he plunges it into his stomach. He kills himself. He leaves a couple of suicide notes, one apologizing for my great crimes. Unclear what the crimes are. Losing the war, condoning the coup. We don't know. But, he dies in mystery. He was close to the coup plotters. He egged them along. At the last second, he seemed to pull back somewhat. Hard to know what he was doing.
It's a detail that the note that he leaves behind has blood on it. Where is that note today, Evan?
It's a Yasukuni shrine. They have this shrine in Tokyo to the war dead, including some war criminals who were buried there, which makes it diplomatically controversial. The Japanese prime minister some time ago went there, and it just caused a big fuss because he's worshiping at the shrine of these war criminals. The Chinese really not happy with that. Anyways, that's where this blood-soaked suicide note resides today.
On the 14th, Japanin time, the emperor is convinced that he must make a radio address to the nation. It's called a rescript. And he has Japanese radio technicians come in, and he records it twice. And yet it's not going to be broadcast till noon the next day on the 15th. That's the night of the long knives, the plotting all night. The Privy Seal, I believe, help me, Evan, if I say this incorrectly, the Privy Seal, Kido, hides the rescript. Where does he hide it?
Fortunately, the rescript, it's actually the recording. The emperor has done a recording, like a record, a wax record, made a record of his surrender speech to be played the next day at noon on the national radio. And the record is in a bag. I think there are two records are in a bag, and they're hidden in a room that was reserved for ladies-in-waiting to the empress. And the soldiers are running through the palace trying to find the record to break it, and they can't find it. And the chamberlains rather bravely refuse to tell them where it is.
So they can't find the emperor's statement that he's going to play on the radio. But the next morning, do I have correctly, at dawn, the emperor comes out and confronts the plotters, or at least some of the plotters. This is an amazing scene. Has it ever been made into a movie, anything like this? I've never seen Inside the Palace.
There is a Japanese movie of this scene done melodramatically, as you would imagine. It is a dramatic scene. The emperor, it's unclear. He claims one version is that he slept through it. Another version is that he watched it through the blinds of his window. In any case, by the time he emerges, the coup has been brought under control by a senior general. One of the coup plotters goes out into the square and shoots himself. But by the time the emperor emerges, the coup has been suppressed by more sane, clearer-thinking senior officers. The coup plotters killed the head of the Imperial Guard and forged an order under his name to give them control of the palace. But another general comes in and puts down the coup at sort of 4 o'clock in the morning.
And the emperor's message goes out to the Japanese people. But the scene you present is that it's impossible for them to believe. And I think there's a physician at the Hiroshima hospital who hears it. What does he think?
Well, he's astounded by this because here's the atom bomb goes off on the 6th, and he's treating these patients, many of whom now are dying of radiation sickness, which is a very grotesque way to die. Your insides melt. And they're watching or listening to the radio in the hospital, and they're weeping, saying, "Don't surrender." And he thinks this is just crazy. These are the people who have been horribly victimized by this war, and they still don't want the emperor to surrender. That's the kind of national psychosis that gripped Japan in 1945.
I think it's important, again, to underline what might have happened if the island was besieged as opposed to the atomic weapons. The women and children had been trained or were training to fight with spears. There was a kind of mania that is now hard to imagine for the Japanese people. Having visited Tokyo once at the generosity of the foreign ministry, these are extremely careful and well-prepared people with enormous ability to get things done and live comfortably together. It's hard to believe that that same people could have been turned into a suicide machine. And yet the facts support that. Is that correct, Evan? It's not just make-believe.
No, it happened. It happened. I mean, how many of would have gone along in this 28 million civilian army? Who knows? But there was not a whole lot of dissent. It was a police state. And the Japanese are very hierarchical, and they're obedient to order and to their emperor. They were in the 1930s and 40s. So there wasn't a huge amount of dissent at the time. There was beginning to be some, and the secret police was picking up on this and worried about it because the emperor worried about a revolution. But there wasn't all that much of it. The Japanese people, by and large, went along with their own self-immolation.
The book is Road to Surrender, Three Men and the Countdown to the End of World War II. Evan Thomas is the author. When we come back, after the war, the ghosts. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.